Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey kids, let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. The skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. Oh, she's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I never seen her better stew.
Hello, and welcome to Betty in the Sky with the Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. In this episode, we have a quasi-theme. We have quite a few stories about getting caught with your pants down on the airplane and some other places. We have an air marshal story and a pilot talking about landing on an aircraft carrier, which I find very interesting. And, let's just get on with the show. I've talked about this before, but flight attendants are very concerned with getting to work and showing up for work because, you know, it only takes a couple times where you're out of a job. So it's like a huge pressure, you know, to get to work. And this guy was telling me that he gets to work and his zipper on his pants broke. And, you know, you don't have a spare pair of work pants with you. So he went up to the duty desk, you know, we have like supervisors sitting in the crew lounge, and he's like, I don't know if I can go on my trip because my zipper's broken in my pants. You know, I can't really go 3 days, you know, with my fly down. So she's like, oh, okay. And she gives him like 8 safety pins, and he's thinking, oh, great. I said, well, how easy was that getting in and out of the bathroom? And he's like, it was a nightmare. But, you know, he was at work, and then I was heard this other story, which I'm not surprised about at all, where this woman, flight attendant, going to work in her uniform, gets in a major accident, goes off of, like, a ramp, ends up upside down, like, hanging, like, only being held upside down by her seatbelt, and the police get there, and the paramedics, and, you know, they're and she's going, turn the car over. Turn it over. I have to drive to work. And they're like, miss, I don't think you're thinking clearly. You were just in a car accident and you're upside down. She's like, turn the car over. Only an airline person can understand that. But she's not like seeing if she has anything broken or bruised or bleeding. She's like, turn the car over. I have to get to work. I'm not even sure how this came up. I was at work and I think a passenger's fly was down. And I said to the other flight attendant, I said, oh, you know what's so funny is you say things when you're a child and you don't even get why it's funny. Or it's just something you say. You just don't think along certain lines when you're a kid. And The amusement park where I grew up in Pittsburgh is Kennywood. Gosh, I loved Kennywood. I don't know if I've really talked about it much on the podcast, but I worked at Kennywood all through the summers during college and loved it. One of my favorite jobs ever. Loved working at the amusement park. And it's very social. There's a bunch of kids your own age there. It's fantastic, actually. But in Pittsburgh, there's a saying that when somebody's zipper's open, you say, Kennywood's open. And so I just said it. I said it forever, not even thinking that what you're saying, because somebody's zipper's down, is you're saying the amusement park's open. Like, I had no idea. I just thought that's what you say when somebody's zipper's down. Kennywood's open.
Look at me. I'm flying.
There was a woman,
a flight
attendant, and she was rather, you know, nicely endowed. And we had this older man on a flight.
Yeah.
And he was sitting on the aisle, and he came out on a wheelchair. So she was, during the service, she leaned over him, and he squeezed one of her breasts.
Oh, my gosh.
And she went, sir. And he says, oh, Missy, it's so nice. And she was laughing, and she says, I probably gave him the very last thrill of his life.
Yeah. Or maybe he does that all the time. Yeah. And uses that.
Don't touch me, feels too real.
So I was working a flight to Europe, and I was working in first class, and, you know, it's so nice up there. You know, you got your own pod, sipping champagne, 5-course meal. It's a real treat. When I sit up there, man, I feel like I'm in hog heaven. So anyway, we're just about finishing the service, picking up the meal trays, and somebody on the other side that I wasn't working on rang their call bell, which doesn't happen that much in first class because, you know, we're so very attentive. There's a bunch of us working up there, and, you know, nobody usually ever wants for anything. So the call bell rang, so I was sort of surprised, went over there, and the woman says, you need to take this tray away. I feel like I'm in prison. And I was like, oh, okay. And I wanted to say something, which of course I didn't. I zipped it, swallowed my tongue. But I took the tray back and told the other girl on the other side, I'm like, she said she felt like she was in prison because her tray was still there. And the other flight attendant was like, I just walked by there not a minute ago and she was still chewing, so I didn't take her tray. So she had her tray for, God forbid, an extra minute and she felt like she was in prison. And what I would have liked to say is, oh, you're right. It is so like prison up here with your own pod and all your movies and you're sipping champagne with a down pillow and comforter and 5-course meal. Yeah, sure. Bet a lot of people would say that's just like prison. I was on a flight to Europe and one of my first class passengers, I just couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. And it really doesn't matter. But, you know, it's sometimes surprising if it's really that ambiguous. So I get back to the galley and I ask the purser, I'm like, is that a man or a woman? And the purser's like, I don't know. I was wondering myself. And I'm like, huh. I couldn't tell by the voice. Voice was totally non-sexual. And I hate to say that it or shim. That's what we started calling it, was shim, like a she and a him, a shim. Shim had medium to big size hands, so you couldn't really tell if those were just small man hands or big female hands. You couldn't see an Adam's apple because Shim was a little heavy. We went and looked at the name on the manifest sheet, and that was just a first initial, so I couldn't tell. So by the end of the flight, we're talking, you know, 9-hour flight, I still never could figure out what it was, just a shim. Okay, so somebody's done something weird on your flight?
Yes, they've tried to pierce their ears. They've cut their toenails in first class. You know who you are.
No, but wait a minute. Pierce your ears? With what? What were they using?
A safety pin.
So, coincidence. accidentally, a couple of weeks ago, I was on that flight with the first class passenger that I couldn't tell if it was a man or woman. And another flight attendant had coined the phrase, it was a shim. And wouldn't you know, 2 weeks later, I'm in the lounge and I spend a lot of time in the lounge because I commute and I have to make sure I get there. So, you know, I have a lot of hours in the lounge before my trip. So I was sitting at the computers talking to another flight attendant that I have flown with before. And another flight attendant comes up, not in uniform yet. Also probably a commuter, so some people are in regular clothes. Anyway, I look at her and I think, she's got like a little beard. And I was thinking, oh, she must have some terrible facial hair problem. That's immediately what I thought of. But then I let it go. I didn't think much of it again. Figured, you know, just seemed nice, smart. We were having a nice conversation between the three of us. And just forgot all about it. And then I go into the briefing room where we all get together and introduce ourselves and stuff. And here comes that same person in the men's uniform with a tie on. And I was like, So I'm thinking my brain is slowly catching on that it's a transgender flight attendant. And it's actually my first transgender flight attendant that I've worked with. And I actually know of and have heard of several at the airline. I think now there's a couple in LA and there's a couple in New York, but I'd never flown with one. So the name is so hard because I was going to say her. It's really hard. And I had a hard time on the trip to keep getting it right. You know, things are blurry these days and they're just going to get blurrier. But the name on our paperwork was a female name, but he gave a nickname that could have gone either way. But he's in the men's uniform with the tie. So I'm assuming that he wants to go by he, right? So, okay, that's fine. Whatever. Whatever's, you know, whatever anybody wants. But we weren't on the plane for like 10 minutes when a passenger, because he was at the boarding door saying hello, right? Which confuses people. And we were on the plane for 10 minutes and a first class passenger says to me, is that a ma'am or a sir? And I was like, well, it's probably open to interpretation, but I'm saying sir. And yeah, she was okay with that. And I had some contact with him, and he seemed very nice, upbeat, in a good mood. So, hey, you know, that was all fine with me, you know. Just interesting because it was the first time I had worked with a transgender person. Okay, so then it got blurrier on the way home because one of the other flight attendants was sick. She must have eaten something or got a bug or had food poisoning, and she had thrown up, and I think she was having some diarrhea. You know, it's just like the worst. I've had it on the plane. Nothing like food poisoning on the plane. It's just horrible. And I've actually, I've passed out from food poisoning. I actually passed out. You get so dehydrated, it's, you know, it's dangerous that I fell into the tub, took down the shower curtain with me, and when I came to, I was thinking, why am I in the tub? I mean, this is many years ago. And so anyway, this flight attendant's sick. And then midway through the flight home from Europe, a passenger screams, help, 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 help. I need help. I was up in first class, so I didn't hear the help yelling. I just heard a call bell and then looked out in the aisle and saw a bunch of people congregating around the bathroom and just immediately assumed it was a medical thing. So went running back there. And it turned out it was the flight attendant. She had passed out in the lavatory with her pants down, and the passenger had opened the door, which wasn't locked, and found her on the floor, their pants down, and screamed, help, 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 which was exactly what she should have done. Anyway, it turns out the transgender flight attendant is an EMT and wants to be a doctor and was the first one to find the sick flight attendant and jumped in there and, like, was the most amazing, wonderful, compassionate human being, caring. She had it coming out both ends, and he went so above and beyond the call of duty and was just such a wonderful, caring, compassionate, empathetic, just a fantastic person, basically. I mean, but I was thinking, we ended up having to page a doctor, we had to have an IV. It was a whole to-do, right? But I was thinking to myself, you know, a couple things. Well, the airline, first of all, hired a her and now has a him. I guess they're okay with that. You know, times are changing. Like I said, things are going to get blurrier and blurrier. But the thing I was thinking that was interesting is that, you know, we like to give people labels and put people in a box. And like before on another flight where I just was so curious whether it was a female or a male, but, you know, really doesn't matter. I guess really I hadn't thought too much about it really until this incident. And it really doesn't matter. Fantastic human being is a fantastic human being, regardless of what gender they were born or what gender they want to be. Anyway, what I was thinking was that female flight attendant that was sick was totally fine having him in the bathroom with her when her pants were down and she was having diarrhea. And I don't think that most likely she would have been okay with a, I don't know how to put this, politically correct, with like a original man, like a man who was born a man, she probably wouldn't have been comfortable with having someone like that in the bathroom. But since this was a woman transitioning to a man, she was totally fine with it. So I guess, you know, our labels and our boxes are all basically going to have to get thrown out the window as we go along further down this road. And my bottom line is a fantastic human being is a fantastic human being. And who cares if it's a man or a woman, a he or she or a shim? Doesn't matter.
Lay me on a cloud. The person was wheeling. This lady was being wheeled on the plane, yeah. And she were going to Kingston, Jamaica. She bent over to get up, and her dentures fell out.
Our uniform vendor changed hands, and the new uniform dress, I don't like it. It's kind of, there's too much material. It's kind of puffy. I think it's not very flattering. So I had all these old uniforms, and they fit great. It's just they're a little faded. They get a little faded, like around the shoulder and on the sort of lapel area, I think because of maybe the seatbelt in my car. Probably has a lot of sunscreen on it from driving to the beach. Or also maybe the seatbelt harnesses on the jump seats. Anyway, it just gets a little faded. But the uniforms fit great and they look nice. It's just they've got these faded areas. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go look for some of that dye. You know, I'll try to dye them. And I did that. And boy, that took a long time. It's like in the sink and rinsing and rinsing and rinsing. And then washed them. And then they were just still faded. The parts that were faded were still faded. So I was like, oh, darn. Huh, what am I going to do now? What else could I try to just make these certain parts a little darker? And so then I thought, what about shoe polish? And guess what? Works like a charm. Now the uniforms look great and, you know, nobody knows that I have shoe polish on my uniform because, you know, that's just classy. You know the drill. If you're going to buy something on Amazon, it would be so, so nice of you to go to my website, BettyInTheSky.com, click on the Amazon ads. It doesn't cost you anymore, and it supports the show. This month, somebody bought a Jimmy Cricket vinyl decal, a Paint Your Wagon DVD, and a Dragon Pad Pop Filter Studio microphone. Or, you know, if you need any shoe polish to fix up your uniforms, that'd be good on Amazon. And I'd also like to thank Thorsten for the generous PayPal donation. That was really nice of you, Thorsten. And plus, that's a great name. So if you're going to buy something on Amazon, consider going to my website, BettyInTheSky.com. It supports the show, and I thank you so very much. Sun is shining bright now.
I'm grounded for the day.
That's all right. So
anyway, I was doing a domestic trip the other day, and we were in Atlanta to Savannah. And I was
waiting at the front door while the Alon was doing drinks or whatever, and this person walked by me, and I didn't notice him until I went back. I said, well, I'll go check the emergency exits to make sure they were brief, and I looked over at this guy by the window, and I said, I looked up, and it was Bill Murray. You know, the actor Bill Murray.
Oh, Bill Murray.
Yeah. You know, he's such a crazy guy. Yeah. You know, just so, he's so funny looking, you know. You just laugh at him just by looking at him. And I said, oh, hey. You know, like, you know, so, you know, I recognize him. And he says, yes, I'm fine sitting here. And there was the empty seat next to him. And then there was somebody else.
He said, yes, I'm fine sitting here.
Yes, uh-huh. And so he was fine. And he had been out to Pebble Beach to play in that celebrity pro-am that he plays. You always see him on TV on that golf tournament. Acting crazy, but anyway. So anyway, there was this little girl. She'd just been flying like 6 months, and her father was a flight attendant too. In fact, I flew with him last week to go to Amsterdam. Anyway, she just about had a fit when she saw him. He went back to the restroom on the ground, and she was like accosting him right outside the bathroom. And you know, he was real nice, and he took a selfie with him, and she was all excited. But anyway, and then. He slept the whole way. You know, he was just slumped down in his seat, his little belly was sitting there. You know, he just had these tacky clothes on, you know. It was just so funny. And then when we got off, the captain was kind of wanting to see him. So the captain was standing out in the jetway. And you know, he walks off, and the captain's standing there. And he goes, oh, thank you for the great flight. And then he's, like, in the jetway. And then he goes, he walks to that side of the jetway.
Like he walked into the sides of the jetway.
Yeah, and then he turns around like, you know, like this, and then he, you know, just.
But was he joking, or is he really walking
No, he was just being funny, I think. But he is such a fun. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It was mostly physical thing that was so funny. But he's just such a.
Well, that was a treat, wasn't it?
It was a treat. You're trying to get me to say things, aren't you?
No, that's good. It's a treat.
But it was like, you know, he was just such a funny fellow.
He
just
lived up to your expectations.
He did. He did.
Just great.
He did.
Flight to go to Amsterdam, and there was a new flight attendant, a new hire. I just love them. They're so enthusiastic and pretty. And I see her, what looks like arguing with a passenger, so I figure I'll go and help. You know, I have more experience. I'll fix this. So it turns out they weren't arguing, but there was a man. He wasn't very, he was like 50. 40s, 50s, sometimes hard to tell. And he wasn't arguing per se, but he was confused. And he was saying to her, so this flight goes to Washington. And she's like, no, we're not going to Washington. We're going to Amsterdam. And he's like, but I'm going to pick up my bags in Washington. And she's like, no, we're going to Amsterdam. And then he's pointing to the overhead bin, and he said, and so this is where I pick up my bags here. I pick up my bags that I checked here. And he's pointing to the overhead bin, and she's like, did you put bags in the overhead bin? And he said, no. And then she's like, well, then you don't pick them up there. It was like he thought that was going to be the conveyor belt for the luggage would be in the overhead bins. So I'm thinking, okay, is he drunk? Is he on something? Or is he mentally challenged? You know, you can't tell by looking at people what they have going on. Or is he just weird? So she says, very logically, she said, let me see your boarding pass. Because she's thinking maybe he's supposed to be going to Washington and we're going to Amsterdam. So his boarding pass says Amsterdam, and then he keeps going on, and he's like, so it's like an hour and a half flight. And she's like, no, it's almost 9 hours because we're going to Amsterdam. He's like, but we're going to Washington. She's like, no, Amsterdam. And so apparently I went up and asked and at the boarding door, and they said, yeah, the agent was already having this exact same conversation with the man, you know, Amsterdam, Washington. No, not Washington, Amsterdam. And they had checked his bags because he kept saying he's going to pick up his bags in Washington. So maybe he thought he was connecting in Washington. But no. His bags are checked to Amsterdam. So he finally, we get him to sit down. And, you know, it's like, okay, And then we're doing the beverage service. And some passengers, two rows back, say to me, so are we getting close to Washington yet? Because they had witnessed the whole shebang. And then at one point during the flight, he goes up to first class and he says to the flight attendant up there, he goes, "This is the dang longest flight to Washington I've ever been on."
You never know who will fly by. Speed of light.
Okay, so something else happened.
Well, I was going to say first carrier landing in the Navy when you're a student. So basically, by the time you go through training, and you get ready for your first carrier qual, you have about 250 hours total time of flying time. So you're not a whole lot of flight time and experience. But you do a lot
land
of.
On a boat.
Yeah, you got to go land on the carrier. So you do a lot of practice on the land. Obviously, a lot of touch and goes. After every training flight, you come back, do touch and goes, and they have a carrier box that's painted on the runway. And they have a landing system that helps you do kind of like a glide slope into that carrier box, simulate, you know, the size of what your landing zone would be on a carrier deck. Well, on a carrier deck, you got four wires, and each wire is 40 feet apart, so your landing distance is 120 feet. Whereas an airline, when we land on a, you know, 9,000-foot runway, they want you in the first third, so you got 3,000 feet to land the airplane. So you go from, like, that kind of 3,000 feet where they want you down to 120 feet on a boat that's moving.
And it's moving.
So you can train as much as you want on the shore, but there's a bunch of conditions that is just unique to being on a boat that you can't ever simulate, not even in a simulator. So first time you go to the boat, you take off as a four-plane formation. You have an instructor as a lead pilot, and you have three student solos on his wing, and he brings you out to the carrier, which is about 100 miles off the shore. So this is the first time you've really flown over a significant amount of water. You're going out to the boat, and you're solo, and all for the very first time. So you get overhead the boat, and you hang out for a few minutes, and then when the boat's ready for you to come land, they give a Charlie signal to the lead, who brings you down and sets you up for what we call an overhead pass, called the break.
Okay.
So you'll come in about 3 miles behind the boat at 800 feet above the water, and you come in, and you come in about 350 knots, and they lead you up just to the right side of the boat, and then you break in formation. So you kind of just, you know, the lead breaks, then a few seconds later, the second guy breaks, the third guy breaks, fourth guy breaks, and you're pulling downwind to a pattern. So you're going from 350 knots, you're pulling the idle, you're pulling the speed brakes out, you're decelerating as you're pulling G's through a level turn, roll out, downwind at 800 feet, and then you start descending down to 600 feet. So by the time you hit the fantail of the boat, you start at about a 28 degree angle bank turn, put a 300 to 400 per minute rate of descent coming around. And as you finish through the turn through about 190 degrees, you start increasing that rate of descent to about 600 to 800. So as you keep that angle of a bank all the way in, when you roll out behind the ship, you should be about a quarter of a mile behind the ship and right on the glide slope. So there's a little lens system on the boat that tells you, you know, if you're high or low on the glide slope, and now you're working to come in towards your landing area. Well, here's an interesting thing.
Okay.
On the boat, the landing area is angled. It's not straight up and down the axis of the ship.
Why is it angled?
Well, that's so airplanes can take off and land, because you got all the other airplanes parked on the deck. So they're all parked up on the forward part of the ship or kind of off to the back of the side tail. So that angled deck allows you to do continuous flight operations and have parked aircraft up there. So what's interesting is the deck is angled on the ship, so as your ship moves forward, your landing zone is constantly moving to the right. So you're in a right-hand descending turn that's constant. And then the boat also moves up and down with the water, but it doesn't just do it straight up and down, it does it in what's called a Dutch roll. And a Dutch roll is kind of an up and down, side-to-side swaying motion. So depending upon the sea state, so if you have an eight-foot sea state, deck's moving up 8 feet, back to level, down 8 feet, so there's 16 feet of deck movement. So as you're rolling around and you're trying to get your glide slope coming down, it's programmed to give you about a 14-foot clearance over the back end of the boat.
Okay,
so as you're coming in, you're constantly, your landing zone's moving to the right, the ship's moving up and down in a Dutch roll motion, and it's moving up and down in Dutch roll motion, then you're coming down. And to make things even more complicated, the wind comes over and hits the conning tower on the boat. It gets turbulent right over the back end. That wind comes off the carrier deck, hits the water, and comes up in a rooster tail. So the best way
in a rooster tail.
Yeah, so the best way to describe it is a mini microburst, like a storm draft that comes down.
Okay.
Okay.
If you go and you Google microburst, you know, those are really bad things where you can get a downdraft real close to the ground. So in order to fight that, you have to add power on the airplane to keep from losing that and getting that downdraft coming in. And right before you hit the back end of the ship, that downdraft goes away, and now you're kind of got to anticipate getting the power back so you don't go overpowered and miss all the wires.
Right, keep going.
But you don't want to under-miss it, too, because then you could fly down through and hit the back of the ship. So it's a very fine window that you're coming in.
Yeah.
So then you got that 120-foot area, and they're targeting the third wire in. So really, the last 80 feet is where that landing zone is for that glide slope, with all those conditions going on.
How'd you do on your first time?
Well, you do a couple touch-and-goes just to kind of get your bearings, just get used to actually coming in and come on the ship, and then you come around for my very first pass. I was a little high, I caught the fourth wire. But for a first pass, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, it gets the adrenaline pumping so much that you're nervous, you're excited, your adrenaline's pumping, it's scary, but it's just amazing, and it's just, I mean, the amount of motions that just go into it is just unbelievable. Your adrenaline's pumping so hard, your hands are literally just shaking, and you just.
So then
it's
this
really
is,
cool feeling.
This airliner stuff's boring compared.
It's just different. It's just different. I put it this way, you know, a military aircraft, you're kind of like in NASCAR driving around the racetrack, you know, and you got a little car that's really maneuverable. You come to an airliner and you're basically taking an 18-wheeler around the same racetrack. It's just different.
Thanks for the ride.
So I was on a flight, and I'm talking to an air marshal, and he was sort of, you know, the military type, sort of a big guy, man of a few words, but I can manage to get most people to chat. And we started talking, and I think we started talking about customs and immigration officials and how they are usually men of few words and also don't have much of a sense of humor. I think I told the story about how I had accidentally checked the Ebola question and was afraid a net and bleach was going to come down on me. And so lots of times when I tell a story, then someone will tell their own story. And that's sort of how I try to warm people up for the podcast. And the air marshals, though, gosh, I don't know if it's their training or whatever, but I bring out that recorder and they back away faster than anything. They don't want to be recorded. Even if it has nothing to do with security or anything, they aren't playing. So anyway, but he'll tell me a story, but he's not going to let me record it. So he said that he was going through customs, and the customs guy asked the obligatory question, so how long were you gone? And he said, 24 hours, being a man of few words. And the guy goes, the official goes, well, what were you doing over there? He goes, I slept. And then the official goes, you're telling me you flew to Europe for 24 hours, slept, and flew back. And the guy's like, yeah, he does it all the time. So the official says, well, we're going to be here a long time. And the air marshal says, why? They are on such different pages because the official's thinking he's suspicious. So then he goes, well, what do you do for a living? And he goes, well, I'm an air marshal. And then the official goes, well, why didn't you tell me that? And the air marshal goes, well, you didn't ask. That's what happens when you get two men who are men of very few words.
I became a flight attendant when I was 21 years old, and it was really my first time being away from home. I grew up in a rural Florida town, and I always went to the same Catholic church with my family. So one of my very first trips all by myself in the big city of Las Vegas was on Christmas Eve, December the 24th, of course. And I had to go to church because that's what you do on December the 24th, regardless of where you are. So I found a church in Las Vegas, and I went to church at Mass at night. And it was a beautiful little church, and the candles were lit. And it was just exactly what you would expect on Christmas Eve, except everybody in there except for me were in there praying for good luck. It was clear that most of them could not even follow the Mass or the ritual of the standing up and sitting down, which is quite confusing to people that go to Mass. but really confusing to somebody who has not ever been in a Catholic church, except when their luck has turned sour on the Vegas Strip on New Year's, on Christmas Eve.
So I've been asking people, just curious, seeing if it was going to turn into something interesting. I've been asking people, if I said to you, Kennywood's open, what would you think that would mean? And so far, I've mainly gotten answers like, I don't know. So it's kind of a wah, wah, wah. So when I was asking people if they to guess what Kennywood's open meant, and nobody seemed to know, and I didn't get any funny answers, except for when I told the one girl what it meant. Oh, I'm like, it means somebody's fly's open and the amusement park is open. And she goes, so Kenny's Wood is showing. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that's right, technically correct, but I don't think that was part of the original saying. But then, flying back from London, had another medical. Seems like, gosh, these long-haul flights, it's like there's some medical situation on every second or third flight. It's scary. I think it's just, you know, people are out of their comfort zone. They're tired. You know, it's tiring flying on a long flight. But this woman was having heart palpitations, and we had her on oxygen. And we're now almost to landing, and the flight attendant who had been dealing with her most needed to get up and do something. So she's like, will you sit with her for a while? And I'm like, sure. So I'm sitting there, and she's got her oxygen on, and her color's starting to look a little better. And I asked her if she had another flight to go on, because, you know, that's important, because she's having heart palpitations and feeling dizzy, and, you know, does she have to go to, you know, another 4-hour flight? And she takes the oxygen mask off and she goes, I have to go to Pittsburgh, and puts the oxygen mask back on. And I was like, oh. And I just couldn't help but take the opportunity. And I said, hey, do you know what it means when you say Kennywood's open? And she starts laughing in her oxygen mask. She knew what I was talking about. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with the Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel around the world together. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, kids, when you fly together, she'll tell you where she's been and tell you where she's going. You'll have some fun, so why not come along? Belts are fastened for takeoff and the signal is strong. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. Oh, she's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too, you know.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.